SEC play begins this week. Arkansas will host Missouri Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Baum Walker Stadium. The Razorbacks, the number 10 team in the country, according to the coaches' poll. 14-2 overall. Missouri comes into the series 11-5. It's a big week for the Razorbacks. They play Missouri, as we said, for three games this weekend, and then they go on the road for six games, beginning with two games at number 18 Texas next Tuesday and Wednesday. Follow that up with a road series at Alabama and then a midweek road game against Missouri State. We've talked a lot in this podcast about how we don't really know what kind of team Arkansas has just yet, but I think we'll really learn a lot about the Razorbacks this week. Maybe not with their SEC opponents. If they lose the games, I definitely think that would tell you something about the Razorbacks. Missouri and Alabama are two teams that are picked to finish last in their divisions in the preseason, but I really think you'll see from a hitting perspective, especially against Texas and against Missouri State, who always have good pitching, just how good of a hitting team Arkansas is over the next couple of weeks. Plus, against Missouri, Missouri will start three left-handers. I'm Matt Jones, and I'm joined today by Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated. We'll talk some about those upcoming games, but Clay, I want to talk first about the games that Arkansas played this last week. Won't spend a whole lot of time on Western Illinois. That was a team that didn't look like they belonged in the same ballpark with Arkansas. But I was really impressed, Clay, with how they played against Louisiana Tech last weekend. Louisiana Tech was a 39-game winner last season, a team that finished second in Conference USA. They finished second to Southern Miss, the team that ended up coming up to Fayetteville for the regional, and they missed the NCAA tournament. They've got a lot of players back. I think they started three seniors, maybe two redshirt seniors last weekend against Arkansas on the mound, and then they have eight of their nine position players back. And, you know, Clay, as you well know, with the scholarship distribution being what it is, Louisiana Tech, they get a lot of these players from across the South who probably have opportunities to go play at SEC schools, but maybe they get a better opportunity to go play for that kind of program. I thought that looked like a really good team last week.
Yeah, the way position players work, unless you're just one of the top guys, you're not going to get a scholarship to an SEC school. You might get invited to walk on, and there's a lot of players on Arkansas's rosters. For instance, Carson Chatty was a walk on, and there are some players that maybe for financial reasons they couldn't go to an SEC school as a walk on. Get a 33% scholarship at Louisiana Tech, and they picked up some good players that way. I was talking to some people in the Arkansas administration in the baseball side of it, and they were talking about some of Louisiana Tech's players. Many of them were the same age as Arkansas's, guys like Jared Gates. You know, they're 22. Jared had noticed that he had played with some of those guys in junior college, and they're juniors and seniors at Louisiana Tech because of red shirts, and which that tells you the age of what that team was, mature team. And I think that of the games that Arkansas has played this year, those are the three most meaningful. Against teams that really do a lot to prepare them for SEC play. I'm not sure Southern Cal is going to be a team at the end of the year that you look at. It's going to be a lot of rating points, other than they do count for two away victories. And I think that's what Dave Van Horn was going for. And also just the experience of travel. And before, they go to Texas and Alabama next week.
Yeah, I think you're right. Eric Sorensen from D1Baseball.com was talking on our podcast a few weeks ago about the people who are on the West Coast like he is, who cover college baseball, have just been really surprised with how far Southern Cal has fallen, and they were taken aback really by that loss to the University of Nebraska at Omaha the week before Arkansas came out there. You know, I thought, Clay, that Louisiana Tech looked like a really motivated team. Like I said, they didn't make the NCAA tournament last year, just one win shy of winning 40 games. And Lane Burrows, their head coach, told me after their Saturday win, he said, hey, you know, even if we don't win the series, just getting this one win here in Fayetteville, it could really do wonders for our RPI at the end of the season. And, you know, that was probably, I think, the most motivated team because of last season, because of their age, that Arkansas has seen this season, it wouldn't surprise me if Louisiana Tech is the best team that they play over a three-week stretch here, at least on the weekends with Missouri and Alabama. That's a team that I think could hold its own against some SEC opponents.
Yeah, and no doubt. And what you think back to, who's won in Baum Walker Stadium or Baum Stadium from last year or the year before, and you start to count the number of teams that have got wins there on one hand. Mm-hmm. And you don't, you know, there's a lot of respect for going to Arkansas and getting a win in a Saturday win when you know that Arkansas still got all of its pitching intact. And not that those guys pitched all that great in that win, but it's, that was a good victory for Louisiana Tech.
I thought you made a really good point the other day when I was talking to you about how difficult it is to pitch in that weather. When we think about windy conditions and baseball, we think about the outfielders and, you know, about how the ball flies, but you don't really think about pitchers. But you're an old golfer, and you talked a lot about it's like a golfer standing on the green trying to putt. It's really hard to get your balance and to go through, you know, those mechanics whenever you're out there in that wind. I wonder if you'll elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, and I talked to Dave Van Horn because I just wanted to make sure that I was thinking in the right terms. You know, I'm sometimes surprised what I think, and then I ask a coach, and they'll just shake their head no. So it's like you don't try to coach, but I have heard tour players talk about the really tough part about playing golf was in the wind and keeping your body stable and your stroke the same and not trying to overcompensate. And the same thing goes when you're in your mechanics and you're trying to hit that same release point and you're throwing into the wind and, you know, you step back and then you come forward and a gust hits you. When I'm talking about a gust, the other day there was some 40 mile an hour gusts. And I saw one time where Dominic Fletcher was on chasing a fly ball and the wind got his hat.
Yeah, it happened twice.
And it went a long way. It just showed you what the wind is. And there were pitchers that were struggling to find their release point, and that's when you start getting hit batsmen. And, you know, the thing that happened with Jacob Burton at the end was really kind of a sad commentary of an umpire that probably interjected himself too much in the game and stirred the game up a little bit. And it was all because of the wind, those hit batsmen, in my opinion. And I think Dave kind of confirmed that a little bit when I talked to him after Swatters Club the other day. So when you see pitchers struggle in the wind, a lot of times it's because of their balance, their mechanics, and trying to hit that release point in a consistent manner. And it's young pitchers especially struggle with that because they sometimes you speed up and really what you have to do is slow down. And same thing with golf. When you're playing in the wind, sometimes you have to shorten your swing a little bit and change your stance a little bit. And it's not much fun. And those guys, they did a pretty good job in some other – really, we've had windy conditions, but none like that. But I thought in some other games they really conducted themselves well in the wind, but not so much Saturday.
Yeah, there, you know, it was another windy game on Wednesday against Western Illinois, and it wasn't the Arkansas pitchers hitting the batters. It was the Western Illinois pitchers. But you go back to the Louisiana Tech game last Saturday in high wind conditions, there were five hit batters. In the Arkansas-Western Illinois game on Wednesday, there were five hit batters. And so I do think there's something there, you know, to the wind causing those pitchers problems. You know, really, though, Clay, the first five innings of that Louisiana Tech game, Connor Noland was in complete control. He gave up one walk, gave up one hit, and had a 5-1 lead going into the sixth inning. An error by Trevor Ezell at first base kind of opened the door a little bit, if you will, for Louisiana Tech, and then they hit a home run off Noland, wind-aided home run to center field, and things fell apart for him. But I thought for five innings, that was probably the best that Connor Noland has looked since he's been in college.
Yeah, those that seen him throw bullpens early in this season when they were in preseason, you know, like middle of January, thought that's how he looked in those bullpens and was hitting his spots a little bit better, having command of more pitches. And I really think that he stayed down in the zone better than he had in some other games, and that was what was concerning in his previous outing, that he left some pitches up, and if you do that in the SEC, they'll crush it. And so that's a good sign going forward, and we'll see how he continues to adjust, because we've been talking about Connor Nolan for a long time. I'm talking about since he was 15, 16 years old, but we have to keep reminding ourselves that he's a true freshman playing his first season of college baseball, and there's going to be adjustments and there's going to be twists and turns to what he's doing this year.
Yeah, no doubt. I thought pitching was the story of the first weekend, or I'm sorry, of last weekend. Nolan, as we said, pitched well for five innings. Cody Scroggins had the best start of his career, easily the best start of his career. Six innings, 11 strikeouts, and only needed about 88, and only needed 88 pitches to do it. I thought that he showed a really good efficiency for being a strikeout pitcher. Needed only about 4.5 pitches per out in that game against Louisiana Tech. And then Isaiah Campbell, for 2 weeks now, he's looked like a Friday night starter in the SEC. Should look like, I think, 23 strikeouts over 13 innings the last 2 weeks against Stony Brook and Louisiana Tech. And I wasn't so surprised to see it against Stony Brook, because that's a team that plays from the north. And but like what we said, Louisiana Tech, you got a lot of batters in that lineup who could potentially be playing on much more name-worthy teams, and he really shut them down really well for six innings last week. I just wonder what you've seen from Campbell the last couple of weeks, because to me it looks like looks like he's starting to really kind of hit his stride, hit his potential.
I think so. And what we have to keep telling ourselves as we go through this season, these guys are getting different feedback than they have the last 2 years, because they've got a new pitching coach. And so they're trying to process the information that they're getting from Matt Hobbs. And it looks like there's a nice mesh there between Isaiah and Matt, and that's good to see. There didn't seem to be any concern in January when I talked to Dave Van Horn about Matt Hobbs taking over for Wes Johnson, but it's something that you needed to see play out, and you needed to see, okay, how does Matt Hobbs handle these guys, and what transpires when he goes to the mound. And I've seen him every time he's gone out there, it seems like it's been a positive effect, that he's able to give them something that gets them, the communication is going in a positive way, and that they're able to use it and get back in their groove, so to speak. And so, but I think that's something I wondered how it would go with Isaiah. It seemed like he had really made a lot of positive steps with maturity with Wes Johnson. And would he go forward or would he go back? And I think, with Matt, and I think it's been a positive go forward thing for Isaiah. And really a lot of these guys have just shown the normal maturity of another year. And that doesn't always happen when you change coaches.
It's interesting you mentioned Hobbs' mound visits. I've actually been keeping track, Clay, of how many times he goes to the mound this year. Of course, they've got the new rule in place where pitching coaches can only take so many visits per game. But he's taken 4 visits through 16 games to the mound, and 2 of those have been to Isaiah Campbell. He's a coach that really, I think, is probably different from Wes Johnson, in that I think he – and it's not to say that Wes didn't trust his pitchers, but I think Matt just trusts his pitchers maybe to work through their mistakes a little bit more than pitching coaches have in the past. And I think you're seeing that. I actually talked with Matt Hobbs recently about Isaiah Campbell, and here's a snippet from that interview.
I think he just smells the beginning of conference, and his work is always really good. Isaiah is probably one of the most meticulous, best workers we have.
Yeah.
Not that we had a lot of good workers, but he's just meticulous and goes about his work with a lot of focus every week, but it's been a little bit different. So mm-hmm. I think he's starting to sense that we're about to get into something, and he's been a lot sharper, and he's used his fastball to both sides of the plate better, I think, mm-hmm. over the last 2 weeks, and that's been something that when you have a guy like him, mm-hmm. he's coming to you with ideas. You know, it's not like we're telling him, hey, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. He's yeah. coming to us with, hey, this is what I'm kind of seeing. And then we're able to back up some of those things with information to give the kids.
When I talked to him a few days ago, he was talking a lot about sequencing his pitches better the last 2 weeks. You feel like you've seen that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And he's done a really good job of kind of latching on to, here's the scouting report, here's what I do, here's the game plan, mm-hmm. and then going and deploying it on hitters. It's pretty exciting to watch when you got a guy that has four pitches that he can command. Yeah. You know, really all of them at any time. So he's been great, and I think it's just he's starting to see that this is who I am now.
That was Arkansas pitching coach Matt Hobbs on Isaiah Campbell. I'll play more from that interview that I had with Matt a little bit later in the show. Also included some thoughts from him about having the catcher call his own games and pitchers trust their pitches and being able to wave him or the catcher off, and some thoughts on Cody Scroggins starting against Louisiana Tech as well. Some good stuff from that meeting that I had with Matt Hobbs the other day. Now, Clay, I know you're going to be at the ballpark Friday night for Arkansas and Missouri. It's a little bit different series, I think, now that Missouri has announced that they're going to pitch off, and they're not calling it a pitch off, but that's essentially what they're doing. They're taking their really, really good junior left-hander, TJ Sikkema, and they're going to hold him for Saturday and pitch him against Connor Nolan. They're going to throw another left-hander, Jacob Cantlebury, against Isaiah Campbell on Friday night. Cantlebury has got about a 2.91 ERA. He's a high strikeout guy. He's not as good as TJ Sikkema, but Missouri obviously is putting its eggs in a basket that we're going to definitely try to win the Saturday game and use our best against not Arkansas's best pitcher, and we'll see what happens. It's kind of an interesting, I think it's kind of an interesting approach that the Tigers are taking here, especially with it being the first weekend of the conference season.
It sure is, and I think that it's a risky situation because you can get off to a bad start in a series and never really get yourself going. I've seen Dave Van Horn do that, where they call it pitching off.
Yeah.
And I've seen Norm DeBrine. There was a period when Arkansas was struggling and they saved their best guy for Sunday and they were, trying to somehow, piece together a win in the first two. And it's like, we're going to get that ace going on Sunday when nobody else did in the SEC. But it's risky. You could be sitting there 0-2 and never get your bats going. And your team has lost its confidence. I think the guy that's pitching Friday night for Missouri is their top two are both good pitchers. But Sikkema is, he's going to be a high draft pick. And I know probably the scouts are scrambling trying to decide, are we going to, a lot of times they'll hit that Friday night game thinking they're going to see the two pitchers they want and then move on somewhere else. They may have to stick around an extra day in Fayetteville if they want to see those first rounders.
Arkansas's hitting has improved the last week or so now. I do think you have to look at the ERAs of the teams that have come in here. Louisiana Tech, they didn't have a starter with an ERA under 5. They may have not even had a starter with an ERA under 6, now that I think about it. Coming into the series, Western Illinois, again, that was just a really, really bad baseball team. The two pitchers that they threw had ERAs in the 6s and in the 9s. And so I don't know how much you can take away from it, but I do think there's something, Clay, to hitters getting their confidence back. And maybe sometimes it takes, facing a bad team for you to have your confidence back for when you do get those good pitchers. And I think really the big story right now for Arkansas from an offensive standpoint is that you have Casey Martin and Heston Kerstad hitting really well in those 1 and 2 spots. Kerstad, I think, is 11 for his last 16, has reached base in 15 of his last 20 plate appearances. And Casey Martin is hitting really well, too. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I believe that he's been on base something like 11 of his last 18 plate appearances. And so they're starting to get that production from the top of the order that they lacked for a few weeks. And, you know, that's, hey, you really need that when you get into conference play.
Yeah, it's interesting you're talking about Heston Kerstad. And there was a period, maybe 2 weeks ago, where you and I talked about whether he was going to have a sophomore slump and or hit the sophomore wall or whatever. And, you know, you saw him take some frustrating at-bats. He's got 15 strikeouts. Casey Martin's got 14 strikeouts. Those are high numbers.
Yeah, they both have been chasing a lot of pitches out of the zone this season.
Yeah, and I think that's just that they have so much confidence. They see a pitch, they think they can adjust to it, and you know, there's just some that you just have to say, hey, that's a pitcher's pitch, and if he throws it there, then you know, tip my cap to him. Mm-hmm. But Kerstad's kind of slowly worked that hit total up. He's got 24 hits, which is the most by three anybody on the team. Ezell has 21. Ezell has a lot of walks, so he, you know, his batting average is about, I guess 9 points higher than Heston.
Yeah.
But it's good to see Kerstad. He's starting to go the other way. He's going up through the middle and to the left side. You know, I talked to him in the off season about how teams were playing him, and you know, there were some really exaggerated shifts late in the year because his spray chart or hit, you know, wherever, you know, like the chart they used to where his hits land, it wasn't so much that he was a pull hitter, but he was right up the middle. I mean, right over the bag. So they were playing the shortstop dead behind the pitcher, and nobody really on the left side. The third baseman's playing the shortstop position, and he said, well, I'm going to start laying down some bunts there. And he did not hit grounders to that side. He would hit line drives down the line, and so moving the third baseman didn't really affect anything in his average unless he put down a bunt. Now, he's not sacrificing for, you know, a bunt or whatever. If there's runners on base, he's going to try to drive the ball. But you'll start to see him. If he'll take advantage of that third baseman moving exaggerated over to the middle of the infield and put that bunt down with nobody on base. And I think you saw that maybe in the last week or so where he saw a third baseman out of position and put down a few bunts. And but it just, you know, he's on base a lot now, and it's just a good sign for this Arkansas team when you see Heston starting to spray the ball again.
I think there's three things that have played into Heston hitting better. Number one is that Martin's getting on base, and I think that's a big key. You know, Casey went through, an 0-for-16 or 0-for-17 slump at one point in the last couple of weeks. He gets on base. He becomes a threat to run. Now pitchers have to, you know, not only pitch out of the stretch, but they also have to throw more fastballs to Kerstad, and he's a great fastball hitter. I think that's number one. Number two, Nate Thompson, it's actually Taylor Smart, the volunteer coach who coaches first base for the Razorbacks, noticed that Kerstad's leg kick had become a little less defined early in the season, wasn't really putting that leg up. And of course, you know, Clay, that can hurt hitters if you know, some hitters, if you make that leg kick too high. But for him, it just seems to bring him into rhythm, and he's done a good job of correcting that leg kick. And then number three, it looks to me, and you hit on this, is that he's not trying, he's taking what the pitchers give him. I think early in the season he was trying to pull the baseball a little bit. You remember that home run that he hit on opening day against Eastern Illinois when he hit it over the bullpen in right field. I think that, you know, maybe over the next five or six games he began to try to pull the ball a little bit too much, and it seems like maybe those three things have really played into him, you know, going through this stretch where now all of a sudden, yeah, he's what you want to see in the two hole.
Yeah, and it's amazing when a couple of hits fall in place, confidence changes, and all at once you got a terror on your hands, and he's a dangerous hitter, and I think that it's every once in a while, you know, you get a run where a pitcher hits his spot and all at once you're in a slump, and it's just, you don't get any mistakes. And then when you do, you miss them. And over the last four or five games, when a pitcher has made a mistake to Heston, he's put the middle of the bat barrel on the ball. And so, you know, we'll see as you go through SEC play, you know, what these averages do. But it's right now the Hogs seem to be close to hitting on all cylinders as far as their hitting approach. If they could, I think you and I have talked about this, and they can find somebody in that DH role, maybe they've got something. But I haven't seen that yet, Matt.
No, that's one of the areas where they're really struggling, is at DH. I think their starting DH right now is hitting something like .218 in games this season. They're just not getting any consistency at that spot. Makes you wonder, you know, Clay, with the way that Jordan McFarland played the other day, you know, and I'm talking about defensively, that if they can get him going, or maybe a Matt Goodhart who had the walk-off hit, if you will, against Western Illinois, a run rule that gave Arkansas an 11-1 lead. If you can get one of those two guys going, maybe they come in the field a little bit more of a prototypical first baseman than Trevor Ezell is at 5'8". Maybe you put Ezell in the designated hitter spot, but they've really got to get McFarland and Goodhart going offensively. And I've been really surprised to this point that hasn't happened.
Yeah, I was talking to an old-time baseball guy the other day, and he says, oh, this Arkansas team, they just need to let the pitchers hit. They don't have a DH. Well, I don't think it's to that point yet. I think you'll see a lot of guys struggling when you start letting the pitchers hit. The point is that they're still juggling, and it might take them another month for them to figure it out. And it was really a long time last year before they figured out what to do with first base. And you know, they tried Gates for a while, that didn't work, and they went with McFarland for a while, that seemed to be shaky. And then I'd say, you know, the last couple of weeks of the regular season and then into the SEC tournament, Jared Gates kind of took off. And I think, you know, we chronicled that what he was hitting in postseason was really pretty good. His overall average didn't show it, but he was a tough out and hit a lot of line drives as they were going to Omaha with kind of riding Jared Gates. So I think the first guy that ever told me this was Chuck Barrett. This was maybe 25 years ago. He says, just remember, baseball is not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some ups and downs. And, you know, there might be somebody that, you know, that Nate Thompson, you know, gets a light to come on, and all at once you see a terror in the DH. And I kind of have a feeling it's going to be Matt Goodhart, but that's yet to play out.
Clay, before we get you out of here, I want to get your thoughts on the Texas series. It's a little bit different this year than it was last year. You know, Texas came in here last season before the start of Southeastern Conference play. They were here on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then Arkansas began conference play with the Kentucky series that weekend, and they hadn't been playing very well. They had, you know, kind of barely beaten Kent State a few days earlier and had to have a rally to win a third game. And then they beat Texas, they beat Kentucky, and the run was on, and it didn't end until they got to the College World Series. It's a little bit different now because Arkansas is going to play Missouri this weekend. They're going to play at Alabama next weekend. Texas plays Texas Tech this weekend, and then they play TCU. And we'll talk to Craig Way, the play-by-play voice of the Texas Longhorns, a little bit later about this too. But it seems to me that once you get into conference season and these weeks where you have five games in a week, those midweek games, it's not to say that the importance of them minimize, but the way you have to approach them changes because you don't want to sacrifice a conference series for a midweek win, no matter who it's over, whether it be Texas or Missouri State the next week. That's always been a big series for Arkansas. I just wonder your thoughts on that because you want to get the win, but you don't want to sacrifice your conference series. And both of these teams are, you know, I mean, they're in the thick of it now, and they're teams that potentially could compete for their conference championships later on down the season.
Yeah, you're going to see the bottom end of the pitching staff for both teams. One of the things that I'll be interested to watch as this weekend plays out is what Arkansas is able to do with Patrick Wicklander.
Yeah.
Does he pitch, or are they into Sunday and haven't used him, or maybe they used him early, maybe he pitches some Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
and he's rested enough to where he can give you, you know, four or five innings against Texas. Texas has got some good lefty bats.
Yep.
And it'd be nice to have him available because he's a guy that has pitched enough innings now that he might be able to handle that atmosphere. He didn't handle it very well at Southern Cal, but that's a chance to get him a little more comfortable pitching in a big setting. And I will be interested to see what it's like, because I think that Texas really was embarrassed by Arkansas with what they did, not just in Omaha, but the two games in Fayetteville, mm-hmm. and that there'll be some emphasis put on this series by their coaching staff, their players, and those guys might remember Matt Cronin's downward hook 'em a little bit, and they might be ready for Cronin. And I talked to Cronin, Matt Cronin, about that back in January, and he says, "I sure hope they're ready." he's like, "Let's go pour a little more gas on that fire." He doesn't care.
Yeah, of course,
that's the guy that's looking forward to it.
Yeah, of course, Arkansas got up so big in that game in Omaha, they didn't need Cronin at the end of it, so it'll be the first time that he's faced Texas since then. I'm interested, Clay, to watch Wicklander on Tuesday night. I still think that it stands to reason that there's a chance that he gets into the weekend rotation before the end of the year, because he's a left-hander and he would break up that parade of right-handers that Arkansas, you know, has on the weekend right now with Campbell, Noland, and Scroggins. And if he can go and pitch well at Texas, that's a lineup that, you know, we're talking about Louisiana Tech resembles an SEC team. Well, Texas really resembles an SEC team with those lefty bats, and not only that, but their experience. I mean, you think about, they've got four or five guys back from last season, you know, who were, you know, in the starting lineup for them, and that's not counting two players who were going to be back and who are out now with injuries. And again, we'll talk to Craig Way about that a little later. Clay's going to cover the Arkansas and Missouri game on Friday night. Make sure to read it at wholehogsports.com. Clay, appreciate you being on here this week.
You got it. Always look forward to it, Matt. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Clay. When we come back, we'll talk to Craig Way, the play-by-play voice of the Texas Longhorns, about this weekend's series, or I'm sorry, about next week's series in Austin. And then we'll talk to Matt Hobbs in the last segment a little bit more about the Razorbacks pitching staff. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Craig Way is the play-by-play voice for the Longhorns on the Texas Longhorn Radio Network from Learfield IMG College. Does football, basketball, men's and women's, and also their baseball play-by-play guy. Craig, I like to listen to you call games when I'm driving across the South on Saturday afternoons to and from Razorback games.
Well, that's very kind of you, especially given from someone who comes from the particular affiliation where you are. I say that jokingly because yeah. I've got lots of friends who work with and around Arkansas Athletics, and Chuck Barrett and I have known each other a long time, so I have lots of fond memories and looking forward to seeing the Hawks in Austin for the midweek series.
And you do a lot of high school football games too. I saw the what was it, Class 6A Division 1 Hail Mary at the end of the season there at AT&T Stadium.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun and a heck of a way to end the season. I don't think anybody expected it to come down that. Here's the other ironic thing, Matt, is that those two schools, Galena Park North Shore and Duncanville, met just a week ago in the state semifinals of the 6A basketball tournament. And Duncanville got its measure of revenge. They won the game, and then Duncanville got into the state championship and almost found itself in a Hail Mary situation against Klein Forest, but held on and won the ball game. So it was like, you know, it was going to be shocking if something like that happened again. It didn't, and Duncanville ended up winning it. So they got a basketball title, even though they had their hearts broken on that football Hail Mary.
You know, Arkansas is recruiting that quarterback, Demetrius Davis, who had the Hail Mary at the end of that game.
Yeah, he's something else, and the obviously the running back Zach Evans has been recruited by just about everybody. Quentin Jackson, the quarterback and do all everything guy for Duncanville. There was a lot of future Division I talent on that field in that game.
Hey, I want to talk to you about this Arkansas Texas baseball series. It's kind of at a weird time. It's a little bit different than last season. Texas came here on its way to its first Big 12 series, and Arkansas had not started SEC play, and now they're going to play this in the middle of a couple of conference weekend series. And I know for Texas, they're two big series, Texas Tech and TCU, you know, really, you know, two of the class programs along with UT there in the Big 12. But what's the anticipation like from your seat for this Arkansas series? Because you're talking about two top 20 teams, a couple of teams that played in the College World Series a year ago. Obviously, the history between the programs, it's a little bit different than just your typical run-of-the-mill midweek series.
Well, it is, and I'll tell you, this is the biggest difference that I've noticed. There have been a few subtle differences, but this is the biggest difference I've noticed in the Longhorn baseball program under David Pierce as opposed to Augie Garrido is some heavy-duty non-conference games, especially the midweek variety. Now, when Augie was coaching, they did play some really good non-conference opponents. But the series with Stanford, by the way, started back in 1998, and they have played it continuously all year through now. I think the contract only runs through the end of this year. And who knows, after Texas dropped three or four out there last weekend, I don't know if they're willing to go back in 2 years. But Augie would have that series, and there would be one or two. But those were like weekend series. David's done is he's kind of beefed it up in terms of the midweek, understanding the changes in RPI over the past few years and the rewards and credits you get based on what, you know, the opponents you're playing both on the road at home. It was last year when they played, it was at a tough time for them. They were dealing with some injuries and hadn't figured out all of their pitching yet. Plus, they had conference play starting that week, and it was going to be difficult. And when they went out of Palm Stadium last year, they were 9-9, and there was a lot of doubt as to what was going to happen and where they were going to go. And then they proceeded, I think, to win 21 of their next 24. And the difference between that last year and this year, A, as you pointed out, it'll be after conference play. It is pretty much the same spot on the calendar, because I remember after the last game in Fayetteville, I hopped in the car and drove basically through the night or got in the wee hours of the morning into Nashville, because Texas was going to be playing in the NTA basketball tournament in Nashville, and that was the press conference day the next day. So it was a long drive. Fortunately, it was a Friday-Sunday situation for them. But anyway, it was going into conference play. Here, they're going to be coming off what a conference series opener against Texas Tech, and it's sandwiched between the two series against the two conference favorites, Texas Tech and TCU. Not only that, it comes near the end of this grueling month of March, which has seen them host LSU, then go to Stanford, then and now this against the Razorbacks, then coming out of the Texas Tech series, then the Razorbacks, then going to Fort Worth to play TCU. So this month of March is really, really a grind for them right now, and it's going to be interesting to see how well they're set up for the two games against the Hawks.
Yeah, and you touched on some of those series. You did mention they played Louisiana Lafayette, perennially an NCAA tournament caliber team. They played Sam Houston State in the midweek, played Purdue on a weekend. Really, you know, challenging schedule that Texas has played. I wonder, though, if you could take me back to the LSU series. That was one that a lot of people here paid attention to because of the two teams playing in it. What did Texas do well that weekend?
Well, I think they did a lot of little things well, and it all timed up well with some of the struggles that LSU had. As you know, LSU has power arms, but going in that weekend, they struggled with some command of their pitches. Texas did a good job in taking walks. I mean, if you look at the numbers, Duke Ellis is leading the nation in walks. Now, he's, I think, got 20 strikeouts this year, too. And in short, he takes a lot of pitches. But they found ways to get on base. LSU, I think, struggled a little bit in the field. Texas struggled a bit in the field as well. But the Longhorns got some solid pitching performances, especially in relief, and timely hitting. And they hit the ball well and obviously had the walk-off in the final game from Austin Todd. So they've done that. So it was, I think it was a combination of several things they put together right at the time when LSU hit a bump here or a bump there, and it all kind of snowballed from there.
Obviously, Texas right now doesn't have its catcher, DJ Petrinsky, shortstop David Hamilton, long-term injuries. How big are those injuries, and what have the Longhorns been able to do to maybe compensate for those?
Well, the loss of Hamilton, you know, just had so many folks going, oh, my goodness, what are they going to do? Because he was, you know, not only an outstanding fielder, he was one of the best in the nation, I think, going into the year. And it started to hit pretty consistently in the second half of the season last year when the Longhorns made their big run. It was just a freak accident, fell off a scooter. Mm-hmm. And they had those on us. Now, I will say this, the fact that it happened during the offseason, happened before the season, it did give David Pierce and his staff time to work with it and plan around it rather than it happening, say, 2 weeks into the season or whatever. So what they did was they turned first to a true freshman in Bryce Regan and a kid from New Hampshire who played at IMG Academy, and he's been relatively consistent with the bat. He has shown some inconsistencies in the field. First of all, I think everybody, and this would be unfair to Bryce or anybody else playing the position, you know, we see a ball hit in the hole, deep in the hole at short. You know, that became routine for David Hamlin to get to that ball and to fire a laser across. He made the at times spectacular look routine, and that's just not going to happen with no matter who's out there. But what I think Coach Pierce wants is to make sure that the routine plays are being made and not struggling with that. So he's alternated both Bryce Regan and Mason Hibbler, who was a junior college transfer last year and played a lot of outfield and some infield, both at second and short, mainly at short, because obviously Cody Clemens was playing second base the majority of the time last year. So he had Hibbler also at third base when he had Ryan Reynolds over at first. So there was some swapping around, but Hibbler played a lot of outfield. Well, he's used Mason at short along with Regan, and I think those two guys will continue to alternate there. With DJ Petrinsky, it's difficult because really he and Michael McCann were the only real scholarship catchers that they had, and Petrinsky's just had a problem with a labrum issue, and they just weren't able to get it right. They decided not to have surgery in the offseason because it was thought it would probably heal. It didn't heal the way they wanted it to. Tried it very, very early. He was only able to swing the bat, play some at first base or DH, and then they just said it better just to shut him down. So they had to do that. McCann has been very solid behind the plate. Here's a guy who actually was started with the program, was released by from scholarship to the program by Coach Garrido at the time. They just didn't have room for him, and he wasn't really contributing, and he was away from it for a season, redshirted, came back, tried out, made the ball club under David Pierce, was kind of a fill-in at catcher last year and did a couple of good things, but he's had to be the everyday guy, and he's been really dependable both at the plate and in the field. And then he got hurt at Stanford on one of those difficult foul balls that hit you in one of those places you don't like to discuss. And it was, I mean, the mere mention of the words groin contusion do not sit well, especially with guys, you know. So it didn't work well. But he is day-to-day. He did take batting practice the other day, and I think he'll be fine for the series. In fact, he's planning on playing against Texas Tech. So with Petrinsky out, McCann was the lead guy, and the only other guy they have is a true freshman named Caston Peter, who – you know, looked like a freshman early on, was kind of struggling with things, and then has kind of turned it around and had his first decent, really nice night at the plate against Texas Southern, where he had his first RBIs and his first home run. He drove in 5 runs. He's still learning and adjusting, but they hope to have McCann back.
Lots of familiar names, Craig, for Texas that they remember from those games last year. Duke Ellis, Austin Todd, Zach Zubia, Ryan Reynolds. One that jumps off the page to me, though, was this freshman, Eric Kennedy, batting second, batting 300, second on the team with 16 RBI. What's his story?
The third of three Texas brothers from the Tampa, Florida area to play at Texas. He had older brothers that played, and his father had been at Texas. And, yeah, he has just jumped right in and has adjusted really, really well. He's been the everyday left fielder and has swung a really solid bat. So he's been pretty impressive to watch. You mentioned the other guys. Austin Todd's guy, and I think David had a good point at this. Coach Pierce, when he talked about the everybody asking him about the David Hamlin injury, so what folks don't remember is last year Austin Todd injured his thumb very early, and he kind of got shelved, and everybody kind of forgot about him. Other guys were contributing. He said, but Todd was one of our key guys. He came back late in the year and helped some, but he had been sick a little bit. But they always believed he'd be able to help the club if healthy, and he's clearly been that. And he's been the most clutch performer, obviously. The walk-off hit against LSU. He had a walk-off home run against Lafayette last year. He had a walk-off hit against them this year. So he's been a really, really solid guy. And Duke Ellis, a preseason all-conference selection, has just been your quintessential leadoff guy, a guy that finds a way to get on base. And most of the time it's via a walk or he's worked the count well and come up with an opposite field hit, can steal you a base, and has been the anchor out in the outfield and center field.
You have to approach these midweek games a little bit differently when conference play starts. Your thoughts on Texas midweek pitching plans?
Well, I'd be surprised if they didn't throw Matt Whalen in one of the ball games. He's kind of emerged as a midweek guy. Depending on what they do with Ty Madden this weekend, he's been a freshman who's been just really sparkling at the time. He threw the shutout at Stanford or 8 shutout innings in the one game that Texas won, but he's not been listed as one of the 3 starters on the weekend. Now, I don't know if David will change that going into this weekend series with Texas Tech, or how ready he wants to have Matt to come out of the pen since it is a conference series. If Madden doesn't work too much, then you could see the sophomore Whalen and the freshman Madden getting the 2 midweek starts, or he could alter that a little bit. Koi Kabu, who's been the Sunday starter, he could push him back and do it as well and come back with Madden as a starter. I think Blair Henley will have his regular turn in the rotation on Saturday against Texas Tech, and I think Bryce Elder will have his regular spot on Friday night. But I would expect Whalen to be out there probably, and then we'll see how he manages with the other guys.
When David Pierce was hired at Texas from Tulane, you know, a lot of people were kind of surprised by that. It wasn't, you know, really maybe the big-name hire that people expected Texas to go after. He was 48-32 when he left Fayetteville here last year, and then, like you said, they really turned it around. What are your thoughts on the way that he seems to have turned around the Texas program in such a short time?
Well, he's got incredible baseball acumen, of course, but more important, he reaches these guys and reaches them differently. Obviously, Augie had his own way of doing it, and he was wonderful with all the, you know, with his connection with the players and his style and his philosophy on the game. David's got his own philosophy as well, and he's able to connect with these guys, I think. He's got a fabulous coaching staff. Sean Allen had left Tulane to go to Alabama and was there a week when David was still at Tulane, and when David got the job at Texas, Sean wanted to be a part of that staff, and David wanted him to be a part of that staff, and Phil Hague does an excellent job of handling pitchers, and Philip Miller. So it's a coaching staff that's incredibly cohesive and communicative, and you don't often always see that, certainly with some coaching staffs. You got the head coach, and you got the other guys who are in a lot of subservient roles, but I'm sure Coach Van Horn will tell you too, that the best coaching staffs are the ones where the communication and the synergism is there with the entire staff, and they all work very, very well together. He connects with these guys really well. They've recruited well, and they're obviously not shy about playing tough opposition. They realize the importance of doing it, and they took their lumps from it last year and kind of came out the other side, and I think they're looking at it in a very similar fashion, that they may take a lump or two going through this brutal stretch of March, but it's going to make them all the better for it down the stretch.
Craig, I'll get you out of here on this. Most important question I'll ask you today, what are your recommendations in Austin for any Arkansas fans coming down for the first time?
Oh, my gosh. let's see. Well, they're coming in on the back half of South by Southwest. The music has lots of live music, obviously, going on and wonderful events, restaurants. Let's see. Masco Rancho for Tex-Mex on South Lamar. That's a standard and a staple. I recommend going down to Lockhart and having some of the best barbecues in the state. You know, Texas Monthly magazines every year list its top 50 barbecue restaurants in the state of Texas. Four of the top 10 were in Lockhart. It's known as the barbecue capital of Texas. It's about 20 minutes south east of Austin, and that's a great place there if they're going to Black's or they're going to Kreitz's Market or Smitty's or Chisholm Trail or any of the fine establishments there. They're all really good.
Well, Craig, I appreciate your time. I know it's a busy time of year. You got basketball, baseball. Or you're in Kansas City right now for the Big 12 basketball tournament. Maybe you can get some good barbecue up there too.
Had some last night, in fact. So it's good. There's good barbecue in a lot of places. I firmly believe in being a win in Rome guy, so yeah. I wanted to sample up here. So it did well. I will be glad to get back home and looking forward to the series next week.
Well, we appreciate your time, Craig.
Thanks, Pat.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app, presented by Absolute Heat and Air. Check out the all-new Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home, and take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app is presented by Absolute Heat and Air. For the absolute best service, trust Absolute Heat and Air.
We end today's show with some thoughts from first-year Arkansas pitching coach Matt Hobbs. I had a chance to talk with Matt following Arkansas's series win over Louisiana Tech for a print story at wholehogsports.com. The audio is just from my iPhone, so it isn't great, but it's serviceable, and I thought Matt had some good thoughts on his pitching staff through the first quarter of the season that I wanted to share with you all. On the day we spoke, Cody Scroggins had 11 strikeouts in the Razorbacks' 11-0 win over the Bulldogs that gave Arkansas the series win. I ask about Scroggins' appearance and his development as the team's third weekend starter.
You can't say enough about Cody today. Yeah. I mean, that's to start the game, you know, he hits the guy in the shoulder on the first pitch, and then to do what he did after that, you know, says a lot about, one, he's a tough kid, but, you know, he was able to use his entire arsenal today, and I can't say enough about how good he was. Him and Zay on kind of the bookends of the weekend to pitch the way they pitched.
Yeah.
Gave us a chance to win the series.
I thought Scroggins and Noland especially were both really efficient.
I mean, definitely.
Like Noland had 42 pitches, I think, through four, and Scroggins had, what, 61?
We were actually talking about that in the dugout as we were going through how many more we thought we could get out of, you know, out of Cody today. And I was looking at the line. I was like, man, it's really similar to what Connor did yesterday. Mm-hmm. A few more pitches because he had a bunch more strikeouts. But he was – there weren't a lot of deep counts, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was – strike one, strike two, and he might miss pitch out of the zone, and then strike three or a ball in play. So he did a really good job.
It seems to me, just kind of reading between the lines of Dave's comments, that number three starter hasn't been nailed down yet. But did you think Cody's performance today may have? I mean, does that make you give you guys more confidence?
Sure. We had confidence in Cody the whole time. Yeah. And, you know,
does it make you approach that game three a little bit different though? Because it seems like the last couple of weeks it's been more of a, hey, maybe go give us three innings and we'll turn it over to the bullpen.
Right. You're kind of waiting for him to take the next step, and he certainly did that. I thought last week we probably could have gotten maybe 10, 15 more pitches out of him.
Okay.
but he's still kind of transitioning into this role, you know, that we hope could. I hope he keeps it all year.
A few days before I spoke to Matt, I had Bubba Carpenter on this podcast. He spoke at length about how Hobbs gives his pitchers the ability to shake off pitches so that they have total conviction in whatever they throw. I was intrigued by that, and so I asked Hobbs about that philosophy.
I just think that, you know, what I think's the right pitch from a 45-degree angle, sitting away from where the catcher is seeing it, doesn't always mean that's the right pitch. And I think pitchers have to believe in what they're throwing. And the right pitch, the wrong pitch in, you know, maybe in my eyes, thrown with 100% conviction by the pitcher turns it into the right pitch.
And, you know, you're kind of in this part of the year where, yeah, you want to win, but it's also about developing your team and getting them ready for conference play. And then I would assume that, you know, by the time you get to conference play, that kind of works itself out, that the pitchers know that, hey, early in the season I threw this and it didn't, I mean.
I think that it's like that. Point, we never get to the point when we have a bunch of finished products on our team. The development's going to happen all the way through, hopefully the last game that you can play in college baseball. Like, we're going to be developing them all the way through it. So it never really stops. Like, that's not something that ever, that we ever take our foot off the gas on. Roles will start to make more sense as we get through conference, but in terms of what they're doing and how they're continuing to sharpen their stuff or use their arsenal differently or develop some more tools for their arsenal, that's never going to stop.
If you had to throw Matt Cronin twice on a weekend right now and you had another save opportunity on Sunday, what would be the – is there an ideal pitcher that you would like to have there at the end to bring in? Maybe a – I guess what I'm asking is, do you have a number two closer ideally?
Or I think right now it's Costy. Jacob Costy Shock would be the other guy.
What do you like about what he does at the end?
I think he's got the mentality to handle it in terms of, you know, some toughness and some grit, and the guy that's had to work his tail off for 2 years to really get here. So he's got that. And then he's also got a plus fastball that's, you know, 93 to 96 and a slider that he can command for strikes and a changeup that's above average. He's got three weapons that he can use at really any time. He's a strike thrower. He's a good athlete, you know. I just think those things end up really showing themselves at the end of the game, and his stuff plays up in a shorter stint. He could, that guy could throw the last four innings of the game for us. He could start and throw five. He could throw the middle of the game. He's really very versatile. He's like a Swiss Army knife in the bullpen. But I do think he could also. He's already proven that this year. He can close games. So,
you feel like Wicklander's kind of worked his way into your midweek. Or into a midweek starter?
Yeah, you know, he's just worked his way into a guy that we trust more than anything. Yeah. So if that means he's going to throw three, four innings on Tuesday or five or six innings on Tuesday and then come back and be available out of the bullpen against Missouri, I just really like him. Like, he can pitch. He's got some moxie. He's tough. He throws strikes. And again, another guy that can deploy multiple weapons.
Two more questions.
Take your time. I'm good.
As you go into this stretch now where you're about to play, you're about to start this stretch where you're playing five games in a week.
Right.
And you're going to be playing SEC teams that are more liable to get into your bullpen early potentially. I mean, I wonder what you're kind of looking for the next couple of weeks out of your pitching staff to see, you know, how they handle maybe more stress on their arms, you know, throughout the course of a week.
I think what we need is what happened this weekend to continue to happen is our starters on the weekend be able to be standing on the mound in the sixth, seventh inning. If they're doing that, our bullpen's deep enough that we can make it work really and be able to still perform at a high level and not have to run tired arms out there. You know, if we have something blow up on us and we have a reliever in the game in the third or the fourth inning, and him having to give us three, four, five innings out of the pen, that exposes your bullpen no matter who you are.
Yeah.
So we need our starters to do what they've been doing.
With the schedule beefing up, Arkansas's pitching staff should be tested quite a bit over the next week as they play Missouri and Texas. We will not be hosting a podcast next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about the first part of the conference season and preview what really is the meatiest part of this Arkansas schedule. The week that we come back, Arkansas will host Ole Miss at Baum Walker Stadium. It will be the first of five consecutive weekends against teams that are currently ranked in the top 25. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for joining us. I'm Matt Jones for Whole Hog Sports. Have a good day, everyone.